Hello, hello, New York Rangers fans, and welcome to episode 24 of the new Ice City Podcast. I'm your host, Vincent Mercogliano of the USA Today Network, and we have another week filled with news for the New York Rangers and a lot to get to on today's show. Our guest this week is going to be a fellow Rangers beat writer, a guy that I've become pretty friendly with in the last couple years since I've been on the beat, and that would be Colin Stephenson of Newsday. So we talk a little bit of Rangers, but it's a lot more about what life was like on the road before COVID, what it was like when COVID hit, what it's been like covering the Rangers in this brave new world, the pros, the cons, some of the fun stories that we had on the road together last year especially. And so I think you guys will enjoy that because it kind of gives you a little bit of a behind-the-scenes look into what it's like to cover this team. And what it was like this week was, once again, more unexpected stuff happening, as seems to happen every week, so I guess it probably should be expected at this point. And that started, or didn't start, but it continued, I should say, on Monday when I arrived at Madison Square Garden. The Rangers had just gotten back from a six-game road trip, so this is my first time at the Garden in a couple weeks. I was going through the COVID protocols, getting my COVID test, you know, waiting for what was going to happen. And I knew at the time that Phil DiGiuseppe had appeared on the NHL's COVID-19 protocol list on Sunday and that the Rangers had canceled their morning skate for Monday. So I had a feeling that something might be up, that they might be waiting for some results. And then, of course, right as I'm waiting for my COVID test results to come back, thankfully I was negative, but it sounds like a couple other Rangers weren't negative, and that would be Adam Fox and Pavel Buchnevich, two crucial members of the team. A big hit for the Rangers losing that guy, or those guys, I should say. And so they went into Monday night's game against the Philadelphia Flyers down three players. They had just finally, on Saturday for that game in Boston, had at least as far as the skaters go, they were still missing Igor Shesterkin, but at least as far as the skaters go, the Rangers had their full complement of forwards and defensemen for the first time really since the very beginning of the season. Artemi Panarin came back. They played a great game in Boston with that 4-0 win on Saturday. Definitely one of their most complete performances of the season. But then all of a sudden, this team that just can't seem to catch a break in a lot of these situations finds out that not only its top defenseman, and I think a lot of people would argue the team MVP so far this year, Adam Fox, is out, but Pavel Buchnevich has been one of their best forwards. He was their leading scorer going into that Monday night game. So losing those guys really hurt. They lost DiGiuseppe, who had played in Saturday's game on the fourth line. And now I just looked, I can tell you guys, right before I started recording this on Tuesday, I just took a look at the NHL's COVID-19 protocol list, and Fox, Buchnevich, and DiGiuseppe are all still on there as of Tuesday, just after 5 p.m. Now, we spoke to David Quinn today after practice, and he told us that it's a day-to-day situation and did not completely rule those guys out for Wednesday's rematch with the Flyers. From having seen this happen a few times, not just with the Rangers, but other times recently, we know that it's not unheard of for guys to go on the COVID list and then come off within a day, 2 days, 3 days in the event of a false positive test, in the event of contact tracing, you know, guys that maybe necessarily haven't tested positive but have reason to believe that they could have been exposed, or maybe have symptoms that they're waiting to see whether or not those symptoms are actually COVID symptoms or something else. So there's a variety of reasons you could end up on the COVID list and not actually have COVID. But in this case, DiGiuseppe's been on the list for 3 days now, Fox and Buchnevich for two. We'll see if they're there on Wednesday. If it goes beyond Wednesday, then at that point you might start to feel like, okay, there's a good chance that these guys have it, and it could be an extended absence for them. But we'll wait and see what Wednesday brings. As of right now, I would not expect those guys to be in the lineup, but you never know. Crazier things have happened. We saw it with Kaapo Kakko earlier in the season. We saw it with Keandre Miller, where they came off of the list pretty quickly. So we'll wait and see on those guys. But it was a hit for the Rangers. I did feel like with that news coming out just shortly before puck drop on Monday, and then the way that that first period went on Monday, that there was a real chance for that game to spiral out of control. We've seen that happen with the Rangers, where they've been deflated. They've had what Quinn has called these backbreaking early miscues, and then it snowballs into having a really bad game, one of those embarrassing defeats that we've seen a few times this season. But the Rangers didn't let that happen, and I thought that that was somewhat encouraging news to take out of this. We know Philly is a good team. We know the Rangers are missing some key guys, including Shesterkin, who's now missed 6 games and will not play on Wednesday either. I can tell you guys that he started practicing with the team pretty quickly after that groin injury early last week. But now I know he didn't practice with the team Friday. I know he didn't practice with the team Tuesday. He did skate Tuesday morning on his own. But I don't know if you want to call it a setback, or Quinn said that it's a nagging situation. That groin seems to be kind of a tricky thing for Shesterkin right now, and we know that he's going to end up missing at least 7 games, which is a big problem for the Rangers right now because of their goalie situation. Keith Kincaid was a little bit of a nice story. He came in and played pretty well in relief of Alexander Georgiev, who has been struggling mightily recently. He got a shutout in that Saturday game against the Bruins. Although he only needed 18 saves, that was a really, really solid defensive game from the Rangers. He wasn't quite as good on Monday. He made some pretty difficult saves. He stopped a couple breakaways. The Rangers had some miscues where they left him hanging out to dry. But he only makes 25 saves on 30 shots. The Rangers gave up 5 goals, including the overtime winner on Monday. And now we know that Quinn will go back to Georgiev for Wednesday. And this is an interesting situation now, because Georgiev has been pulled from each of his last 2 starts. In the last 20 shots that he's faced, 7 of them have resulted in goals. This clearly, and Quinn reiterated this today, looks like more of a confidence crisis, a mental situation, than it is anything physical or anything technical. But the Rangers just signed Georgiev to a 2-year contract in the offseason. They felt great about having him as their number 2 or 1B behind Shesterkin, and they are pretty determined to give him at least a chance to get back on track. Kincaid started the last 2 games, but Georgiev will get a chance to get back in there on Wednesday, and this is going to be a really critical game for him. Not just because the Rangers are missing Shesterkin and they need him, that's a pretty obvious thing, but if he has another bad game, like let's say it got so bad that they needed to pull him again for the 3rd straight game, then you're looking at a situation where you're wondering, how do they proceed? So this is a really big start for Georgiev. He needs to at least hold his own. He can't have another meltdown where he gets a quick hook. We'll see how that plays out. I'm not surprised. You know, I know Kincaid has been a nice story, and I did think it was the right decision for the Rangers to start him in the previous 2 games. But with him not being great on Monday, and with Georgiev needing something to feel good about, you had to figure he was going to get back in there at some point, and Wednesday seems like the logical time. So we'll see what happens. But getting back to the game on Monday, what I was saying about feeling like the Rangers did have something encouraging happen there was the way that they responded in that second period. They went into the second period down 2-0. They actually score 3 goals in the period and end up taking a 3-2 lead. So they showed some resiliency there. That inconsistency that we've talked about so often, where they have these dud games, they didn't let this game turn into a dud. Now, it turned into a loss, but it was an overtime loss. They came out of it with a point. And talking to Quinn afterwards, talking to Artemi Panarin afterwards, talking to Jacob Trouba afterwards, they were disappointed in the loss, no doubt, but they felt like that was at least a positive step, that they didn't fold. They didn't hang their heads and feel sorry for themselves. And that's something that's important. I've talked about this several times, and we're actually going to touch on it in the interview with Colin, that in the second half of the season, we all know it's a long shot for the Rangers to make the playoffs. But at the very least, you want to see them competitive in every game, and you don't want to see them have a game where they look like they don't even belong on the ice with the other team. We know how tough the division is. We've talked about all this stuff at length. But at least they responded on Monday. That, I thought, was a good thing. And Panarin played great. Panarin was their best player on Monday, only his 2nd game back from that 9-game leave of absence. And he had a goal or an assist on all 3 of those points in the 3rd period. He looked dynamic. He looked like himself. The lineup just looks so much better with him in it. Even with Buchnevich out, having Panarin in still makes the forward lines look a lot better than they looked when Panarin was out. So he's been dynamic. He's been great for them since he came back. He's been everything you could hope for. We did, now I mentioned this on last week's podcast, we did get a chance to talk to Panarin on Monday night. That was the first time that we talked to him in a few weeks. First time since he returned from that leave of absence. We've gone over the allegations and the shady stuff that he was accused of that we think for the most part looks like it's been discredited, unfounded. But of course, as I told you guys last week, when we got a chance to talk to him, I thought it was important to ask him the question, to ask him, what is your response to these allegations and why did you feel that it was necessary for you to leave the team? Because he was gone from the team for about 17 days. So Panarin, you know, I wasn't really surprised with his response. I definitely didn't think that, especially at a post-game setting, that he was going to go into a lot of specifics and detail. I asked him the question and he said, the quote was, "This is probably not the time to address it right now. I have nothing to hide. I will address everything after the season, but right now the focus is on the game." So we heard that from him now. He made it sound like he plans on addressing it at some point, but he'd prefer to wait till after the season. You know, in these Zoom settings, there's only so much you can press with that. I'm going to respect that because, as we've mentioned countless times, all the reporting and information I've been able to gather is that there's really nobody else besides the KHL coach Andre Nazarov backing up these claims. But I do think it's important at some point we do hear Panarin's side of the story, and that's why I asked the question. And at some point in the future, I anticipate that we will. All right. We'll get to our interview with Colin in just a moment. I did want to mention that Wednesday's game will mark the official halfway point of the season. It's a 56-game season. Wednesday will be game number 28. So on the back end of the program with some of your questions, I'm going to address a little bit of where I feel like the Rangers are at this halfway point. Touch on it a little bit in the interview with Colin as well. On Thursday, my plan is to do a deeper dive on loha.com/sports/Rangers, where I talk about, I'm still kind of toying with what I'm going to do for the format, but it's basically going to look at my questions for the second half of the season, what I feel like the Rangers still have to prove, is the playoff push realistic, where are they at in terms of their development, which players need to solidify roles in the second half of the season that will then lead into the 21-22 season. So a lot of stuff to touch on then. You know, again, we'll talk about it more in the program, but I also wanted to note to everybody that that will be a story to look for on Thursday. But before that, let's get to our interview with Colin. And so, without further ado, here he is. And now we will welcome into the show a guy who I've gotten to know pretty well in the last couple years. He is, I guess you could say, a competitor. He is a fellow New York Rangers beat reporter. He works for Newsday, so you can find all of his stuff there, although you should definitely read mine first, but then go ahead and read his. And that is Colin Stephenson. So, Colin, welcome to the show. How you doing?
Hey, man, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me. It's really cool getting on and, you know, talking a little hockey, a little life, a little lacrosse, whatever you want to do, man. It's all good.
I told you, Colin, I prepared nothing for this, so I don't know where this conversation is going to go. We're used to spending like every day together, and now this season it's different. Like, we're seeing you at the home games, but obviously we can't go to practice. I mean, the group chat with the texting is going pretty frequently, but it's definitely different this year. We're not spending as much time around each other.
No, you know, it's the weird thing about this is, you know, when you tell people who aren't in our business and don't know how it works, that like the people I work with are essentially my competitors, yourself and Carpi and Larry Brooks and, you know, Dan Rosen. And, you know, that's the group, you know, those are who we work with. You know, it's a lot of fun. Cause I think, we all kind of have, you know, a good personality and everybody's funny, and it's just, you know, we all kind of get it, you know. I mean, it's just, it's a good life we have. But yeah, no, it's weird to be cut off from that. Like a lot of people, I'm sure, you know, this time we're working from home and all that. You know, that's, you miss that interaction with people. And, you know, it's definitely a thing probably I miss the most.
Oh yeah, for sure. I'd absolutely agree with that. I'm curious. I think I'm sure we've talked about this before, especially last year when we were on the road together all the time, but like, when you see a new kid come onto the beat, like 2 years ago, I show up in Vancouver for the Kaapo Kakko draft. Like, are you like, who the heck is this kid? You know, like what's his deal?
Well, you know, yes. To a degree, that's what it is. And of course, You're by far the youngest one, you know, unless you count Molly Walker, but you're the youngest one that's there every day. And so, with me and Carp and Larry, we're at a certain age. We have, like, you know, we've been around a long time. And those two are older than me, mind you. But, you know, we have a frame of reference that, you know, it's sort of when you come along, it's like you're totally new and you're into all this analytics stuff and, you know, all this kind of stuff. And you ask, you know, and this is true of anybody. It's not you. I mean, anybody who comes in is going to ask some questions that we kind of look at sideways, like, why is he asking that? Why doesn't he already know this? But you know, listen, you've picked it up real quick and you've become one of the boys just like that. And, you know, it's all good. But, you know, I've learned a lot of stuff from you, too. So it's, you know, so that's the good thing about this kind of relationship that we all have.
Yeah, I mean, you and Carpy, like, especially, were very welcoming at the beginning. Larry, in his own way, over time, I think I've chipped away at him and has become more welcoming too. But it is interesting. And, like, you know, for me, what stands out, especially in terms of the memories and the camaraderie and all that, is the road. And we don't have that this year. But last year, I mean, for a large part on the road, it was just me, you, and Brett. Now, obviously, we know Brett, like, Larry covers the Rangers for the Post, but Brett was on the road with us all year last year. So the three of us, we had some good times on the road. That especially for me, because I've been to some of those cities before, but I haven't experienced them while working and chasing the Rangers around and chasing whatever news of the day is going on. So for me, that was an awesome experience. And then all of a sudden, we're in Colorado and everything kind of stopped.
Everything was weird. I have such vivid memories about that trip. You were coming home the next day anyway, as I recall, right?
Yeah.
But I was going to, you know, the last leg of the, so the first leg, you know, was in Dallas, which is not one of my favorite spots. I find the city to be a little bit too spread out and stuff. You kind of have to know where you're going. It's a lot harder to manage than one of these, you know, other cities where there's a dedicated downtown and the arena's right downtown and all that kind of stuff. So Dallas, not one of my favorites, but, you know, we get around there and then we get to Denver. And then I was really looking forward to going to Phoenix because there was a couple days in between the games, you know, like, so whatever night it was, I think it was a Wednesday night that we were in Denver. The game was on a Wednesday and then we were going to have, like, fly to Phoenix Thursday and be completely off and then have a practice day Friday and the game Saturday or something like that. So we're going to have 2 days in Phoenix. And I was really, really looking forward to that. You know, I got a buddy that lives out in Tucson and, you know, my wife's cousin lives in Scottsdale. So, you know, I was really looking forward to that. And then, you know, and then everything just happened, you know, and remember it was like right just before we got to the press box and the word started filtering out that, you know, the NBA was shutting down and, you know, we all knew where it was going from that. And the whole thing was just so, so weird. Like that whole night, that whole arena, the vibe was just like crazy, you know? And I've read my story that I wrote, you know, my game story off of it. And I remember thinking, putting this together, like people are going to be bombarded with COVID-19 stuff. You know, maybe they'll want to read about a little bit of hockey and stuff, you know, but it was just so hard to kind of generate any enthusiasm. And it was a great game, as I recall, right? It was, Boots scored with, 10, 12 seconds left, something like that. And then go to overtime. And it was a big game. You know, if the context had been different, we would have been talking about the game instead of, you know, the NBA game.
Yeah, I absolutely remember in the press box before the game, like that whole trip is very vivid. I feel like I've flashed back to that several times in the last year. I think you were on my left in the press box. And I remember when we were getting the news about the NBA stuff. And then I don't remember what happened to you that night, but I know that Brett and I ended up getting drinks at Union Station and it was like pretty deserted. And we both had this sense of like, this is probably going to be the last time we do something like this for a while. And then even the next day, my flight wasn't until it was like 6 o'clock at night, 7 o'clock at night, something like that. And I had to check out of my hotel and I was just wandering around Denver and
you check out of the hotel and you'd be just like wandering all over these various cities.
And I would love like looking up, you know, I love to eat. So I would love to look up like different places that I wanted to try to, you know, dine at. But I remember just like this eerie feeling around the city, and even being in Union Station, like waiting for the train that would take me back to the airport. And I remember vividly looking at this guy who brought in these hand wipes or whatever they were. And before he would sit at the, nobody was wearing masks at this time, but before he would sit in the seat at Union Station, he was wiping down the whole seat with these, you know, disinfectant wipes. And I'm like, something, this world is changing. Like, people even thinking about something like that was so weird and foreign at the time. And then I got home that night and I pretty much did not leave home, as I'm sure was the same with you, for like, I don't know how many months.
Right. So what I did that night, we were all going in different directions, right? You were coming home regardless, and you had all your stuff booked to come home. Brett and I were going to Phoenix, and, you know, Brett had some golf thing. He was going to go play golf or whatever. And I was obviously booked to Phoenix, but, you know, I had an early flight to Phoenix. And so the reason I didn't go out with you guys was because I wanted to go back to my room, and I spent the night trying to change my flight. And then I couldn't get my flight changed. So what I did was I had like a 7 o'clock flight or something, because I was excited to go to Phoenix. And so I went to the airport. I spent the whole day in the airport because I had to go to the airport to change the flight in person. Like, they wouldn't do it over the phone. So then what I did was I changed to get a later flight home, because I knew at some point the NHL was going to announce that they're, you know, we were just waiting for the actual announcement. I couldn't move until we got that. So I changed to get a later flight home and spent the entire day in the Denver airport just watching Twitter and seeing what people were saying. And this one was saying, oh, I'm in Denver and I just saw the Rangers, or, you know, rumors all over the place. But yeah, so that's where I spent the day until we got the official word, you know, that the NHL was shutting down. And then I was able to change and get a flight, you know, get off my later flight to Phoenix and get a flight home. So I flew home that night. So I spent the whole day from like 7 o'clock in the morning till whatever time I flew home, which was great. And then, you know, went to my son's wrestling. My wife was like, oh, as long as you're coming home, you know, we're having the wrestling dinner tonight. So, you know, I had my cab service, instead of taking me home, had to take us to the wrestling dinner. And that was the last thing I did before everything shut down. So, yeah, I mean, it was a strange time. And, you know, the thing about, you know, the Rangers is they were playing so well at that point, right? I mean, like, I was convinced, I think we were all convinced, that they were going to make it. There was 12 games left. They had cut it to 2 points. And, that, you know, Mika was scoring every night. And, you know, Shesterkin was balling out in the goal. And, you know, I was just convinced they were going to make it. And, you know, I don't know that they've been the same since.
Yeah, I don't know if I was as convinced as you, but they were keeping it interesting. And for everybody, I'm sure everybody's lives individually came to a halt in one way or another. But like, for us, it was go, 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 go from September on, when training camps start and then all the traveling. And then it's like all of a sudden you're home and you're unpacking your bags and it's like, all right, like, I have not really had a minute to like process anything beyond what I'm doing today for months. And now it's like, are they going to continue the season? Are, you know, am I even thinking about like a playoff push anymore? Or there obviously are bigger things going on. It was wild. It was really, really wild. You know, we touched on it a little bit. You mentioned it a little bit that Dallas wasn't one of your favorite cities, but you got me thinking, what are your favorite NHL cities? Like, what were your favorite places to go? I think you covered the Devils back in the day too, right? And then you've been on the Rangers for the last three seasons.
Yeah. 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 So yeah, I did cover the Devils, you know, back in the old days. And even before that, I covered the Islanders back in the 90s. So Montreal obviously is probably the number one. And, you know, I took, you know, high school French and everything. So like, I'm one of these guys that, you know, I get a kick out of like reading the street signs that are in French and, you know, going into a restaurant and reading menus in French and stuff like that. And I do get a kick out of that, I have to admit. But yeah, so that's, you know, that's a whole exotic thing. It's another country and it's, you know, another first language and stuff. So that kind of adds to the mystique, I think, a little bit of it. So that'll probably be number one. But you know what, my other one, and I don't know how much time you spent there, you went to the draft certainly, is Vancouver.
Yeah.
Vancouver's, you know, badass, man. I love that. Love walking around there, and there's such life going on there, and you can get any kind of food you want. I think New York is great for food. No, but, you know, Vancouver's got all kinds of stuff. Asian food, you know, Middle Eastern food, you know, everything. Sushi, you know, it's you know, if I had to pick where I'm going to go, those would probably be my two top spots. But you know what? I like to – Chicago's a little weird because, you know, you think Chicago and all that, but it's just – it's one of those cities where it's – there isn't like that centralized downtown that I like that makes it easy. So you kind of have where you stay in and where's the, you know, how easy it to get to the arena and do we need to rent a car? And, you know, the arena is not in a tremendously good neighborhood. So like, you don't necessarily want to be standing outside, you know, on a January night when it's cold waiting for a car, and, you know, so logistically Chicago's a little bit different, but I do like the food options though. Brett and I went out and went to like a blues bar, you know, last year. And, you know, so that's, you know, that those probably are, you know, and in Toronto is nice. You know, we found a blues bar up there too, that was interesting. You remember that sushi place that me and you went to in Toronto?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, that was good.
Yeah. Right. The food, the sushi there was really good. Larry Brooks turned me on to that one. So yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, it's just different. You know, you get out of the house and you go see, you know, and the thought that there's life somewhere else, you know, but yeah, no, those would be my favorites. Would be Montreal, Vancouver, you know, probably Chicago, Toronto. I mean, the Florida thing is, you know, it's nice to get to Florida, you know, get to warm weather when it's cold. California is the same way too, but that's, you know, there's a lot of them, you know. I mean, I could live without probably Detroit and St. Louis, but you know, what are you going to do?
It's all part of it. Yeah. So for me, before I took this job, I had never been to Canada. So getting to see some of those Canadian cities was really cool. Montreal definitely was my favorite. I agree with you there. We had a lot of fun there. I forget the name. We went to the same bar both.
Yeah, trips we went there. To the bar.
I forget the name of it. And there were people trying to like get us to go into some raffle or sell us something. They kept coming around to the table. I remember that. But yeah, what I distinctly remember about Montreal, because like you go to Canada and it's like, okay, I'm in another country. But I remember, I think I took a train. They had played in Ottawa, and then I took a train from Ottawa right to Montreal. Yeah. It's a pretty short trip. And then I remember getting off at Montreal and holding the door for this girl, and she thanked me in French. And I was like, oh wow, like I really am like, you know, Ottawa's one thing, you know, like Ottawa's fine, I guess, you know, but it still kind of feels like everyone's speaking English. It doesn't feel that foreign. But then you go to Montreal and you hear all these people speaking French, and everything just seems so old there. Like even walking right around the streets, it just feels like you're kind of back in time. So Montreal was really cool. And I agree with you, Vancouver was, I had a great time that week. That was a lot of fun.
The great thing about Montreal too, is it's, you know, from here, it's drivable. I mean, you know, you could, you know, like even if you're not working, like if, I mean, I don't know if I'm going to do that, you know, might maybe take my son up there or something, but like you could get in a car and drive to Montreal and it's like 5 or 6 hours or something. And you could get there and be there. So it's not like, you know, like California's a whole different thing, right? You got to get on a plane, you got to fly 6 hours and all this kind of stuff. But you know, Montreal is drivable. You could go up there on a weekend. I mean, you know, there's lots of Ranger fans make the trip. You know, that's the other thing too. Like when you go on these trips, you're always surprised. I'm always surprised, and I've been doing it for a number of years now, at how many Ranger fans are in the building everywhere we go, right?
Everywhere.
People make a trip. Everywhere. A lot of them, yeah. You know, a lot of them go once a year and they make a trip. Or, you know, I ran into a guy in a hotel in like Edmonton or something, and he was from San Francisco and he was a big Ranger fan, and you know, he came up for the Western Canada trip, you know what I mean? Like, so there's a lot of that too, so which is always cool.
Yeah a few of the trips that stand out to me, like I had Vegas was just so cool because that arena is like right on the strip pretty much, and I stayed at the Luxor, and it's like you're walking downstairs and you got the whole casino atmosphere, and we went out for steaks that one night, and that was like probably the most expensive dinner we had the whole season, but that was so fun.
You can't even expense that meal, it's so expensive.
Yeah. I had a lot of fun there. We had some fun in Carolina. Like, remember we went to that bar where we had to pay the $1 membership fee and they checked us for firearms before we went inside. So that was a fun trip. Yeah. I mean, the whole experience for me, it was, you know, I was probably wide-eyed a lot of the time, but it was really cool getting to experience all that for sure. And I hope next season there's some semblance of normal. We'll see.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I'm skeptical, Vince, to be honest with you. And, you know, I'm skeptical that things are ever going to go back to the way they were. I think there's stuff we've lost that we're not going to get back. But, you know, I do think there's going to be some travel to some extent, but probably not as much as, you know, we're used to. But hey, listen, maybe I'm wrong. You know, I hope I'm wrong.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you to some degree, but obviously we're going to push for as much access as we can get, and hopefully things will be more normal, at least than they are now. A question that popped up into my head, I'm curious, I think the fans are going to kick out of this. Which one of us do you think annoys David Quinn more?
You, me?
Yeah.
You know, I got to say it's me. I think I've been around longer, and I think I just ask him questions that he doesn't want to answer. And, you know, and it, you know, the whole Zoom thing's weird though, too. Right.
I mean, it is so weird. Yeah.
He's, you know, when we were there and we were on the road, I remember the one time in, where were we? It was Carolina, right? Where you guys went off talking to Quinn, and I went to the locker room, and you guys didn't need locker room. So you just ended up shooting the breeze with him, you and Brett and whoever else. And I'm in the locker room going, turning my head going, where are these guys? I mean, I'm getting my ass kicked on some kind of scoop right now because, you know, I'm not where they are. But yeah, I mean, like, it's so much easier when you're around these guys and they can see you and you can joke around. And now there's no time to joke around. I mean, he's on there, he's getting four questions. There's no kind of snarky comments that you can get away with and stuff like that. And it's just, the whole thing's just different. But, you know, he gets what we do, or he got what we do. And I think now that, you know, it's just different with the Zoom. I just think that now we have so much less access that I just think that we're more of a, it's less part of the routine. Like, you know, it used to be part of the routine and I think he didn't really mind it, but now I think it's just more of a, an annoyance to him, all of it. You know,
you and I
are at the bottom of the list for sure.
I will say in some ways it's probably good if he doesn't like all of our questions, because, you know, you probably want to hit some notes sometimes that forces him to go out of the comfort zone. But with him, even like the Zoom, totally agree with you. It takes the personal touch out of everything. But him, at least we talk to every day. Like for me, it makes a much bigger difference with the players because we used to go into the locker room. Like I know fans probably have some grasp of this, but it used to be every single day. I mean, usually they get one day off a week, but 6 days a week, we would walk right into the locker room, whether it was practice rink, MSG, on the road, and you just walk up to whoever you want to talk to and talk to. And a lot of times it's a formal interview, but a lot of times it's just kind of shooting the breeze or getting to know each other a little bit better. And, you know, you uncover little bits of information that way, you build relationships that way. It's that whole part of it is, I feel like, the biggest thing that's missing for us is the locker room access, because now it's just, you know, we get one or two guys a day on the Zoom and, you know, everybody hears what everybody else is saying. Everybody's using the same quotes, and that definitely changes the job completely. And, you know, we're all in the same boat. So, and it's understandable. Listen, we totally understand why they're taking the precautions they're taking right now. Obviously everybody's safety is of the utmost importance, but it is a totally, totally different way of doing this job than the first season I was on the beat. And for you, the first two seasons you were with the Rangers, because now everything's virtual.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the things that, you know, I've sort of, you kind of have to adjust how you work. You know, it's very difficult now to, you know, like there were days I would go to practice and I would turn to Joe McLitty and say, Joe, what, I have no idea what I should write today. What should I write today?
I thought that was just a running joke.
No, it became a running joke. But there were days when you go, as you go to practice and you don't know what you want to do, and you don't know if a guy's going to hide in the locker room, if a guy's going to be there, or if a guy has to leave. Sometimes they have other obligations that they have to leave and stuff. So you go and there's always something that comes out of locker room. You go in and, you know, like I will never forget one day last year. This is my favorite story. I go in and I have no idea what I'm going to write and no idea what I want to do. And Booch is sitting there, and you know, Booch, Captain Happy, you know, and he's just sitting there and he was by himself. And I went over, like you said, just to say hello and just, you know, just to talk to him and, you know, we had a testy exchange early in the season and I just wanted to just say hello. And I talked to him and I said something like, Booch, how you doing? And he was like, I'm doing terrible. And, you know, that thick Russian accent is, you know, I can't believe, you know, I haven't had a goal in 10 games. And I didn't have any idea that that was the case. Right. I had no idea that the guy was in a slump. I was literally just going, you know, to say hello and try and, you know, kind of, I don't know, kill some time. And, you know, and I got into this thing about how down he was on himself because he hadn't scored in 10 games or 12 games or whatever it was. And I wrote this, you know, daily story just about Booch being down on himself because he hadn't scored. And the next night, of course, he scores a goal. So that became my thing for a while. Where, like, you know, I would just go up to guys and say, hey, man, I talked to Booch and, you know, he hadn't scored in 12 games and, you know, and then he scored. So you should talk to me. So that was, you know, that's the kind of stuff that you do miss. And those are the kinds of stories, you know, right now, as you said, everybody's getting the same story every day. But the point that I want to make is I came to the realization or I came to the decision, you know, maybe a month or so ago, then I'm going to write what I want to write every day anyway, regardless of who we get. Because, you know, as you know, we don't get a say in who, what players talk to us. Like, we don't even get to request them. Like, they choose the players. And you know, there's days when the players they choose, you don't have a story idea. Like, you don't need that player that day. So I just decided, you know what, I'm just going to write what I want to write. And if I can find a quote off of whatever our Zooms are today, then fine. And if not, I'll go back into my files and I'll find an old quote that'll work, you know? So, you know, you just, it's all adapting and finding, you know, different ways of doing the job, which I suppose is what we all have to do in life anyway.
Yeah. I've said this to a few people that have asked this question, and I feel like this pandemic has forced me to get more creative and think more outside of the box. Because I mean, think about it. We went 10 months where we had 3 games. They went to the bubble for 3 games, and that was the only 3 games we had for 10 months. So if you're just relying on, you know, what's happening in the game for your story, that would have been a terrible period. So, you know, in some ways I think it's good because it made me, and I'm sure you and a lot of the other guys sort of flex the creative muscles a little bit more, but you know, it would be nice to be able to have these conversations with these guys. You mentioned Booch. I remember one time I went up to Booch to ask him. He was on a little bit of a hot streak at one point last season, and I was asking him about his offensive production. And he was like, you know, he's like, I see you write about my offense, but you haven't been giving me enough credit for my defense. And it's like, you know, guys, they would never say something like that to you on the Zoom. You know what I mean? But like, that kind of banter is only going to happen when you're in person. So we'll see how it goes. Last thing, Colin, before I get you out of here, and I appreciate the time. We haven't really talked about like the Rangers right now. Quick thoughts, because we'll see how quick it is, but next game Wednesday is going to be the halfway point of the season. Right. Like, some people are panicking because they feel like the team has all this talent and they're so inconsistent and they're maddening in that way. Some people are saying it's still a development year. You got to be patient. Like, where do you kind of stand with where the Rangers are at now at the halfway point?
I'm definitely not panicking, but you know, I expected them going into the season. I thought they would find some kind of way to make playoffs. And obviously I don't feel that way now, but I think the next best thing is to just keep doing what they're doing and just kind of keep developing these kids. I mean, I'd like to see Kako score a goal once in a while. I'd like to see Alexi Lafreniere score some more than he has, but you know, they're playing and they're getting better, and you know, Keandre Miller, and you know, now we get to see Tarmo, how do you pronounce that? Reuninen.
Yeah, I think you nailed it. Yeah.
So, you know, I think at this point, I don't expect them to make the playoffs, but I want them to make a strong run to make the playoffs. Let's enjoy them for this year, and next year, maybe we can put pressure on them. What about you?
Yeah, my mindset going into the season was a little different. I did not see playoffs, and we did, like, USA Today had me do my division predictions, and I had them sixth, and that's where they are now. So I'm not really surprised with how where they are in the standings. This division, to me, when the divisions came out, this was clearly the toughest division. And, you know, maybe if they got hot at a certain point, you know, a playoff run wouldn't have been out of the question. But I did not think that I saw that coming based on the experience of the team that they're chasing right now. To me, it was always more of a development year. And I think that next year is, like you said, when the pressure gets ramped up, especially depending on what they do this offseason. Like, if they make a splash this offseason, because we know all the assets they've accumulated, they got, you know, this really good prospect pool and all the draft picks and all that stuff. Like, if they go out this summer and they add a top six level center, or they add some kind of impact player, then I think that ramps it up even more where you expect playoffs next year. But I think like the real window to contend you know, once guys like Kako and Lafreniere and Miller and Lundqvist are hitting their prime, that's probably even still 2 years away. But I think the pressure gets ramped up next year for sure. And for the rest of this year, what my main thing that I try to communicate to the fans as often as possible is there are certainly knocks you could have on them right now. Like you touched on it. Like you want to see some of those young guys take the next step and start scoring more and all that. But the inconsistency, I think, has probably been the most alarming thing this year, where they have these really good games where you're like, wow, this is a talented team. They can hang with the best teams. And then they have these duds. And that's what I think was a little bit encouraging for me about Monday was like, you know, they had all this stuff going wrong for them. They have a couple of their best players go on the COVID list. They have a bad first period. And we've seen earlier in the season that kind of snowballs and gets ugly. Right. And I think that what you want to see is at least they're making in-game adjustments. They're battling. They're not kind of hanging their heads. And they're finding ways to stay close in these games and pull out some of these close games. And that's what you really want to see is you kind of just want to see. And Quinn has mentioned this quite a few times is, he feels like their biggest issue is inconsistency. And I think that is, if you're going to feel good about the way the season ends, if you're thinking playoffs, you're probably stretching. But if you're asking for more consistency and more development, like that's what you want to see in these last 20 whatever games.
So listen, real quick, before you let me go, I got to know, like, where do you stand on this Fire Quinn thing? Because, you know, the fans, these fans are like, and I'm just like, you know, all right, I'll put it out there. I'm not a Fire Quinn guy. I mean, like, I like what he's done. I like what he's done with the young kids, especially. I don't really get and people get crazy when like he changes the lines. And I'm like, the guy's just trying to find something that works. But that's just me. What about you? Where do you come in on? Where do you come down on that?
Well, as I know you well know as well as I do from talking to anybody in the organization, like, there's no chance that they're going to do that anytime in season, right? The time for evaluating is going to be in the off season. And I still think that there's a really strong chance, unless the wheels completely fall off in the second half of this season, I think there's a strong chance that he's back next year. I wrote a column about this a couple of weeks ago, like what I think he's done well and what I think he still has to prove. I do still think that there's things he needs to prove. Like, I think that if the Rangers in the second half of the season are still battling with this inconsistency and some of the young guys are still tripping on themselves and they're not clearly taking steps forward, then in the off season, it's a legitimate conversation to have about, okay, what is the future of this team as they're taking the next step? And if we're expecting them to make a playoff push next year, is he the right coach to see it through all the way to the other side? Cause he was here for the beginning of the rebuild. And then once you go to the next phase, is he still the guy that you want there? So it's a legitimate conversation to have at the end of the season, but you need to see how this season goes and kind of assess the full body of work, not just emotionally react to every win and every loss. So I'm definitely not in the yeah, exactly. So like go ahead. What are you saying?
Every too many men on the ice penalty.
Yeah. Yeah. But you know, like that is the nature of fans and it, in some ways the passion keeps it fun, but I know for us, it can make you pull your hair out at times when you just feel like, you know, every little thing is like the end of the world. And I think people, you know, from our perspective, it can be entertaining sometimes, but then other times you kind of roll your eyes at it. But yeah, I mean, anybody who thinks that firing him anytime in the season is something that they're even considering, you're way off.
Exactly.
So the time to assess is in the off season. And I do think the second half of the season, even though we're not expecting playoffs, you want to see development, you want to see progress. And so I think that it's a valid conversation to have after the season, like, okay, where are they at under him right now? But, you know, as far as the game to game, the Twitter trends and stuff, I'm not there.
I love Twitter, man. Twitter's awesome.
It is. All right, Colin. Well, listen, I appreciate the time, man. Hopefully I'll see you soon. I mean, I guess, you know, we'll be seeing each other at home games, but not as much as we're used to, but definitely appreciate the time. Hope everybody enjoyed kind of seeing some of this behind the scenes banter. And, you know, I guess when you start a podcast, let me know and I'll come on yours.
All right. We'll do that. You'll be my first guest.
All right. Sounds good.
All right, man. See ya.
All right. Thanks again to Colin for taking the time to come on the show. Colin, I'm sure had a long day covering practice, and, you know, to help me out was definitely appreciated. He did text me. I want to mention this really quickly before I get into our Twitter questions. Colin texted me after we were done and wanted me to make sure that I mentioned, when I had asked him about his favorite NHL cities, that he said he forgot to mention Nashville. And he wanted me to make sure that you guys knew that Nashville is one of his favorites, and I absolutely concur. Nashville was definitely one of my favorite cities that we went to last year. Just because it doesn't have the typical NHL city feel, and there's music everywhere, and where the arena is located, it's right in the downtown area, and there's a lot of great places to eat, and you can walk out onto the main strip, and, you know, there's all kind of country music and stuff going on, and that was for sure one of my favorite trips of the year. I actually went down there a couple days early and got to spend a few days, used like a vacation day down there, I believe, and got to spend a few days kind of exploring the city because I hadn't been there before, and Nashville was awesome. So definitely put that near the top of the list as far as favorite NHL cities. And with that, we will move on to the final segment of the program, which is your weekly Twitter questions. And the most popular question this week for sure was some form of this, and we'll go with a question from Michael Anthony, who asked, back to the debate over development of the number one and number two overall picks, obviously talking about Alexis Lafreniere and Kaapo Kakko, neither seem noticeable and consistently play the boards as opposed to trying to generate offense. Should we be concerned with their mental game slash lasting effects of the way they are being taught this year? All right, a lot of things to touch on here, and I actually did a little bit of research to emphasize a few points here, but I will definitely agree that neither has played very well lately. We know Kakko had that stretch where he was on the COVID-19 list, and since he's come off, I actually thought his first game back against the Devils was pretty good, but it hasn't been all that consistent for sure. And then Lafreniere had that stretch where he had 6 points in 6 games, and then it's been quiet. I did not think that he looked very good in the game on Monday against the Flyers. So definitely a little bit of cause for concern. I do not think that either's development is being ruined. I think that that is a little bit of a extreme narrative, if you will. I think that they are being taught, for sure. Quinn, no doubt about it, stresses the finer points of the game, the littler things that don't show up on the stat sheet. He wants them to play more physical. He wants them to be committed in the defensive zone. I mentioned on last week's show that Chris Kreider talked about Lafreniere really seemed to be focused, especially early in the first couple weeks of the season, on making sure that he was living up to his defensive zone responsibilities. And we know that that was something that they harped on with Kakko a lot last year, and he's been much better this year. But I do not think it's being ruined. I think that those are important things for them to keep in mind. But at some point, yes, I absolutely agree that you do want to see an uptick in their offensive production, and you need to let them do the things that got them here. You need to unleash the skill that they have. And it is on Quinn to figure out a way to do that. That is an absolutely valid concern at this point in time. I touched on that in that story that I wrote a few weeks ago, where I basically broke down what I think Quinn has done well and where I think he still has something to prove. And unlocking the potential of these high draft picks, not just Kakko and Lafreniere, but also Vitali Kratsov, I think is a big test for him moving forward. And that's something that the Rangers need to effectively do. But as far as hitting the panic button on it at this point, I think that there's a lot of reason to take a deep breath, take all factors into consideration, and understand that this is a process that doesn't usually happen overnight, as much as I know a lot of you would like it to. Now, we've talked a lot with Kakko and with Lafreniere this year about their play being better than their points would lead you to believe. I wrote a big story about this with Kakko when he turned 20, and obviously we've addressed Lafreniere quite a few times. But here's a couple stats just to kind of lay out what people mean when they say that kind of stuff, right? Kakko's goals for per 60. This is a very simple stat. This is just for every 60 minutes that Kaapo Kakko is on the ice, how many goals do the Rangers average? All right, this isn't an advanced analytic. This is like a simple stat. His goals for per 60 is 1.8. Now, on the other hand, his expected goals for per 60, which measures the chances he's creating and the offensive situations that he's putting himself in, that is a 2.5. So his goals for per 60, what the Rangers are actually generating with him on the ice, is a 1.8. But his expected goals per 60 is a 2.5. That's a pretty significant difference. And what that should tell you is that he is creating more scoring chances than he's actually cashing in on points. Now, is that a concern? Absolutely. But it shows you that maybe there's a little bit of bad luck involved. Obviously, he needs to become more polished as a finisher. Obviously, he needs to figure out how to turn those scoring chances into points. But it's not as bad as his point total right now, which is a low number, might lead you to believe. Lafreniere, very similar. His goals for per 60 is a 1.98. His expected goals for per 60 is a 2.58. Those are the two biggest discrepancies on the team. No players on the Rangers have a bigger difference between their goals for and their expected goals for. A lot of times I will say that one of the issues I think I've noticed with both of these guys is they tend to favor going for the extra point, or I'm sorry, extra pass, instead of pulling the trigger on the shot. You would definitely like to see them get more of a quote-unquote shooting mentality in those situations and kind of smell the blood in the water and figure out how to finish. There's no doubt about it. But again, the underlying numbers, and I've talked to people with the Rangers about this as well, the underlying numbers tell you that they probably deserve a few more points than they have. Now, that still leaves a lot to be desired. They still absolutely, no doubt about it, need to get better and need to become the offensive dynamic threats that they were drafted to be. But at this stage in their career, you need to give a little more leeway in terms of development versus demanding immediate results. So they could be better. There's no doubt about it. There are concerns that are valid, but it's not a situation where I would say that they are being ruined. I think that that is extreme. One more thing for a little perspective here. I took a look at the last 10 number one overall picks in the NHL draft, right? Three of those picks were Nathan MacKinnon, Connor McDavid, and Austin Matthews. Those are the clear standouts. Those are the three best centers in the league right now. Those guys stepped right onto NHL ice and were impact players. But that's only three of the last 10. The other seven would lead you to believe that guys stepping into the NHL and being immediate success stories is not as common as you might think. I think that those last three names I mentioned spoiled people a little bit. I'm going to run through some of the names here. Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, right? Center with the Edmonton Oilers, is going to be a free agent this year. We've actually heard his name speculated a little bit about with the Rangers. He had 52 points as a rookie, but dropped to only 4 goals in 40 games in his second season and has still, 10 years later, never eclipsed 70 points. His highest total ever is 69. So this is not a guy that is a superstar caliber player. Another guy, I'm probably going to butcher this name, but Nile Yakupov. He was the number one overall pick 9 years ago. He had 31 points as a rookie and now isn't even in the league anymore. He's playing in the KHL. Aaron Ekblad still hasn't produced more than 41 points in a season. Nico Hischier, the Devils are still waiting for him to break out. Rasmus Dahlin, defenseman for the Buffalo Sabres, who was picked number one overall a couple years ago. Same thing. The Sabres are still waiting for him to break out. And then if you look at last year's number one overall pick, Jack Hughes, we know he only had 21 points as a rookie. So if you thought that Lafreniere was a McDavid or a Matthews or a MacKinnon, I think that you were overhyping him. I was told, and I've said this on this program, was the best forward prospect a lot of people believe to enter the draft since Matthews, but clearly wasn't on that level. So I still think, from talking to scouts and talking to different people around hockey, that people believe his upside is high. People believe that he will be a top six winger in the NHL. But he's probably not going to be a superstar, and he's definitely not going to be a superstar as a rookie. And we're seeing that pretty clearly right now. So just going through some of those other recent number one overall picks should tell you that if we look at the last 10 years, only 30% of them were guys that in their first year or two were really high-level players. The other 70% took some time to develop, and a lot of them, some of them didn't even end up developing at all. There's one guy in particular who isn't even in the league anymore. So I think this all needs to be taken with a little bit of a grain of salt. Absolutely, you want to see progress from both Lafreniere and Kako. Absolutely, you want to see those point totals jump up. I don't think that it is necessarily a lack of opportunity for either of them, because they've both, if you look at this objectively, they've both spent a lot of time in the top six for the Rangers so far this season. So I don't think it's like they're being buried on the fourth line and not getting opportunities. Kako started the game on the first line on Monday night. Lafreniere spent a lot of time on the first line so far this season. Kako spent a lot of time in the second line playing with Panarin and Strome so far this season. So I don't think it's a lack of opportunity there. One thing I would like to see is at least one of those guys getting a chance on the top power play unit. I tweeted about this on Monday night. There's a few times where Mika Zibanejad set up Ryan Strome, who's been working on that right circle, and he was in position for a one-timer, but because he's a righty shot instead of a lefty shot, wasn't able to get that one-timer off. So I would at some point like to see the Rangers put one of those young left-handed shots, whether it's Kako or whether it's Lafreniere, in that spot and see if you could just get them some power play points to feel good about themselves, seeing if you can get one of them to be effective in that role. That's one slight criticism I would give and one thing that I would like to see. There's only one spot, so it's got to be one or the other, but one of those guys I would like to see him use there. But as far as five-on-five, even strength, these guys are both playing on pretty prominent lines with other skilled players. It's not like they're being sent out there with a bunch of grinders. So I don't necessarily think that that is a big issue at this point. And again, with Kako in particular, we don't know how COVID is affecting him. A lot of people believe that that's had lingering effects on a guy like Mika Zibanejad. Kaapo Kakko has only been back for a handful of games since his stint with COVID. So he could still, for all we know, be picking up steam. Because again, I did think before he went on that COVID list that he was looking pretty good. I thought he was one of the Rangers' better forwards before he went on that COVID list. So we will see. Listen, this is going to be an ongoing conversation with these guys. I am not absolutely excusing their low point totals, but I also don't think that this is like, oh my God, they're ruined. The Rangers picked two busts in the last couple of years. Like, let's hit the brakes a little bit on that stuff. All right. Next question comes from Sean Cavanaugh, who asks, what were thoughts on how Tarmo played? And could he get more time over Libor the rest of the season? So Tarmo Rajuninen, we know, made his NHL debut on Monday, kind of out of necessity because Adam Fox was placed on the COVID list. And, you know, his ice time was limited. He played just under 9 minutes, obviously wasn't used on any special team situations. So that was 9 minutes at even strength. And he did get the assist on the first goal of the game. Really, really pretty setup. Cross-ice pass from him to Panarin. He put it right in Panarin's wheelhouse, right in the perfect spot for Panarin to unleash a screaming one-timer. I mean, that was an awesome goal to watch. And so you saw a little bit in that moment of his puck-moving skills. That's what the Rangers like about him. They don't necessarily think he's going to be a high-scoring defenseman, but they do think that he makes good decisions with the pucks. They do like his mobility. He's not an especially big guy. He's only 6 feet tall, like 180-something pounds. So he's not like a bruising type, but they feel like he's pretty responsible in the defensive zone. They feel like he's mobile, and they feel like he makes good decisions with the puck. He ran the power play for the Hartford team in the AHL. And so I wouldn't look at him upside long-term much more than maybe a bottom pair defenseman. I think in the grand scheme of things, a lot of these other defenseman prospects that the Rangers have, especially on the left-handed side, like a Keandre Miller, are higher upside guys. But I think that it's worthwhile for sure to give him an extended look in the NHL this season and see what you have. The question for the Rangers is, once Fox comes back, who comes out? And Tarmo was the only one in that mix right now who wasn't on the team when Fox was there. We already know that Jack Johnson's been waived. I think that's a wise decision for the Rangers to give themselves the flexibility to move him down to the taxi squad and to lean more on guys like Libor and Tarmo, because you want to see what you have in those guys, and those guys are still very much developing. But in the Libor Tarmo debate, Sean. I think that the Rangers view Libor as ahead of him at this point. I mean, that's pretty clear based on the fact that Libor got the first opportunity this season. Hayek, I think, is an interesting case because, to me, what we've seen in the last few years is that he has not taken off. His prospect status has taken a hit. I think that there has been some growing pains. The Rangers feel like he doesn't always necessarily play with the confidence that a guy who has his skill set should have. So a little bit of it they feel like is in between the ears. I think that both of these guys, Libor and Tarmo, in the long run are maybe guys that are competing for a bottom pair role. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see because we'll see how many games Fox ends up missing. And then that debate would be between Tarmo and Libor, which one's playing better at the time that Fox comes back. And then the other guy that you could consider taking out of the lineup would be Brendan Smith. But do the Rangers feel like it's important to have at least one veteran presence on their decor? You know, Trouba, I guess you could say, is a veteran presence. Obviously, he's a leader on the team. But if you looked at the way that they arranged the D pairings for Monday night, they had Ryan Lindgren play with Libor Hájek. Lindgren, I guess, comparatively is a much more experienced guy. And then they had Brendan Smith on the bottom pair with Tarmo because I think they didn't want to send Tarmo out there with another really raw young guy. And if Fox came back and they took Smith out of the lineup, that would mean your bottom pair is Libor and Tarmo. And I think the Rangers would have some serious valid concerns about trusting them as a pairing with both of them being young guys who are very much unproven. So I don't know. We'll see. It's a good question. Quinn said he liked what he saw out of Tarmo. He thought he made good decisions, and we'll see if his ice time increases moving forward. But I do think it's a positive that at least he made his NHL debut. He had a point in that NHL debut, so that's something for him to feel good about. And now you take it from here and you see if he grows into a role. You know, Libor really has struggled to do that, and now we'll see if Tarmo can take advantage of that opportunity. All right, our final question comes from Andrew McNitt, who asks, how do you see the forward line shaking out when everyone is healthy and Kratzoff is ready? I told you guys on the show last week that I was told that once Trakhtar was eliminated from the KHL playoffs, that it would be roughly 10 to 14 days the Rangers were anticipating before Kratzoff would be able to clear all the COVID protocols and be eligible to practice with the team. We know he's in New York now as of Tuesday, March 16th. He arrived over the weekend, I believe on Sunday, or it might have even been Monday morning. It was Sunday night or Monday morning, but he's in New York now. He's quarantining. He's going through the proper protocols. It's possible that maybe by this time next week, probably another day or two or more, as long as he has no setbacks and clears all the COVID protocols, that you could start to see him at practice, and then you start figuring out where he fits. And I wrote about this a couple days ago, that after talking to a handful of people about it, I do feel like it's important that the Rangers give him an opportunity, and they are planning to give him an opportunity. I was told that that will be a priority of theirs, but not just an opportunity on, let's say, the fourth line. I do think that it's going to be important to play him in the top nine, play him with some guys who complement his skill set, who can let him use that playmaking ability to continue with the confidence that he built in the KHL this season, instead of sticking him in a role where he has less of a chance of success and maybe you risk dashing that confidence in any way. So for me, I think it's important that the Rangers find a top nine spot for him. And if you look at the way that they are, the forwards are when they're healthy, moving Colin Blackwell out is kind of the obvious decision. He's been playing on that second line for the last couple games, and his right wing spot could be Kratzoff's right wing spot. The only thing I wonder there is, would they put him on that line with Panarin and Strom when you know the reason they like Blackwell in that spot is because Blackwell is a guy who is going to do the Jesper Fast sort of things, playing good defense, hustling, getting to the net front, all that stuff that we've talked about. So Kratzoff, that's not his game as much. So I don't know if he's a fit necessarily on that line. Maybe he is. I don't know. But I think somewhere in your top nine, you're going to look at moving Blackwell out and putting Kratzoff in and giving him a chance to develop, giving him a chance to keep building that confidence, and giving him a chance to propel himself into next season with a viable role on this team. because that's really what you're concerned about with him first and foremost, is setting him up for success in the future. And next season is when you're looking at him as a possible regular in your lineup. And I think it's important that the Rangers don't put him in a position where he's playing with guys like Brett Howden and Brendan Lemieux and sort of being forced to play out of his element, sort of being forced to play in a role that we know isn't well suited to his game. So that's my two cents on that. I do think we will see that. I've talked to a handful of people about it. And again, it's been made pretty clear to me that he will get an opportunity to play in some NHL games. So I'm pretty confident about that. And I think that internally the Rangers feel that to get the best evaluation on him moving forward, they need to see him in a top nine role, not on a fourth line role. All right. With that, that will do it for this week's program. I hope you guys enjoyed it. We're coming out a day earlier than usual this week because the Rangers have that game on Wednesday night, and obviously I won't be able to record at that time. So that'll do it for this week's episode. The following week, I think we'll be back on a normal schedule with the episode coming out on Thursday. But in the meantime, I hope you guys all have a great week, and I will talk to you soon.